This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get rewards points delivered too. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
Hello, this is Hey Dude Shoes. This is an ad, but not for your ears, for your feet. Are they listening? Good. Hey Dude Shoes are the squishiest, airiest, lightest go-to shoes you'll ever have the pleasure of introducing your toes to. So light, a butterfly could steal them. So soft, kittens seethe with jealousy. So cushy, your hands will curse your feet for all the love and attention. Toes, you've hit the jackpot of comfy. Hey Dude, good to go to.
Whether you're buying a new car or used one, it's a big investment, which is why you should choose Pennzoil Platinum. It helps extend the life of your engine and protect it up to 15 years or 500,000 miles, whichever comes first, guaranteed. That's because Pennzoil's base oil is made from natural gas and 99.5% free from engine clogging impurities. The proof is in the Pennzoil. Enrollment required. Keep your receipts. Other conditions apply. See Pennzoil.com/warranty for full details. Find it at Firestone Complete Auto Care.
Welcome again to Cottage Talk. This is our post-match of Fulham's 0-0 draw against Crystal Palace at Selhurst Park. Joining me is Max Cohen in the bottom square. In the right-hand square is Mike Gregg coming back on the show. Also, Mike is actually a very good contributor to the Fofcast. Also want to mention the Fofcast. They do a great job as well. So it's good to have Mike on this show as well. Guys, let's not waste any time. Max, I'm going to go to you first. Let's talk about this 0-0 draw. I'm going to ask you the basic question. I've done this before. Let's do it again. Max, mad or optimist Max coming out of this match?
Yeah, I mean, there's really only one way to put it, and it's 2 points dropped. Simple as that.
So, I said that on the full-time show.
Yeah, I don't know if I go as far as to say mad, but I'm definitely upset. I'm not optimistic about this. You know, we have to win that match if we want to stay in the league. And I know I've said that in many, many opportunities this season after the West Brom match, Brighton match, and, you know, we've found ourselves back in it. But it's the same way that, you know, we drew the West Brom match, but then we go and win against Everton, an unexpected 3 points. The same situation in the next three matches. You know, are we going to get two draws, you know, against Spurs and Liverpool, maybe sneak a win? But it just makes it so we have to overperform against the big teams. That being said, we haven't played poorly against the big teams.
I was going to say, we played pretty well against
them. But getting a win against them is a different story. So the main frustration here is that we didn't convert the chances. I think Maja is guilty of missing two really big ones. Another thing that I want to talk about is Cavalero. I think made a big impact off the bench.
I agree.
Finding, I think his best place for him is playing on the wing and coming off, you know, for the final 20 minutes. That's a good role for him. And in addition, I think the Parker substitution to take off Anguissa and put on Mitrovic actually didn't have the intended effect.
Well, we're going to talk about that because I want to get both you and Mike's thoughts on that when we talk about the second half.
I think we completely lost the midfield in that situation and lost our groove. But again, main takeaways, Palace showed absolutely no ambition to win the game. We're the only team in it. And to come away with it with only 1 point is not disgraceful, but, you know, it's going to give us a big mountain to climb again.
Okay, so your biggest takeaway from the match is simply 2-point Strats.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Mike, over to you. We were talking off air, you know, it's like, okay, we're going to spend some time talking about this 0-0 draw, but let's just, you know, kind of limit it because, and just want to mention to everyone watching live, just stick around with us because the second half of the show, I think, is going to be fun. We're going to be doing something very interesting in the second half of the show. So just want to mention that. Mike, give me your opening thoughts on this 0-0 draw.
Well, it really was dull, wasn't it? I mean, I don't know what you saw in America, but at halftime on the BBC here, they were actually talking about line of duty. Which
I heard about that.
So, yeah, the first half was pretty dire, wasn't it? Second half was a lot better. But in the end, I've got to agree with Max, you know, it's 2 points dropped. And, you know, there's a lot of games recently against the teams at the bottom where we're not losing, you know, but we're not beating them either. So we're not picking up the points, which would make this run in a lot easier. And so, you know, to go to Palace, I mean, we haven't done very well there in previous years. And for a home team, they were very, very poor. And
very poor, Mike.
You know, I know Palace fans aren't happy with Rory. And, you know, and you have to say, if I was watching that, I'd be very, very disappointed as a Palace fan. But, you know, we should have won. You know, it came away from it. It's definitely 2 points dropped. And there was only one, I think I tweeted or something, there was only one team that was going to win it, and that would have been us.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, they woke up for the last 5 minutes, I think. But, you know, I think that's partly our own undoing, which gave them some chances. So, yeah, it's disappointing. Yeah, you come away Sunday. Yeah, we should have won. We should have won. And,
absolutely, Mike.
It's the story of the season. You know, tight, and but just can't create good enough chances. It's all right having 10, 12, 13 shots, whatever it is, but it's creating the chances. And I think seeing Maja since he's joined, you know, we saw those goals against Everton.
Right.
Create them. And that's what, you know, he's played 5 games now. He's got 2 goals. But, you know, he was a little bit more involved on Sunday. But his whole career for us is going to be whether we can get the ball to him in that sort of 8 yards from goal.
See, I totally agree, Mike.
Yeah. So it just showed that we're not creating enough. So is that down to who we have on the pitch? You know, we might talk about it later, but I think it just, you know, not having Kearney, who is clearly the best creator or best passer that we have in the squad, I would say. And it just shines a light on how much we're missing a player like that, if not the same player himself.
Well, what's interesting, Mike, and I don't know if you saw Gordon and Rob's show with us, but Gordon was, you know, again, talking as a striker, that the striker, you know, Maja or Mitro, just not getting the service, Mike. Do you think it starts with not having Kearney, or is it also a bigger issue out wide? Because why are they not getting enough crosses and action into that box?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, there's two types of things there. So if you've got Mitrovic playing, he wasn't getting good enough crosses to him to have enough chances. And then with Maja, when apart from the Everton game, we're not going to the byline again,
right,
or playing the balls through like that. So it's a question of down to formation. It's a question of quality as well. You know, Robinson, we all like Robinson, yeah? We all like the way he tacks down that wing, and that's why he was brought on at halftime. But let's be honest, his final ball needs to be better, doesn't it?
Oh, totally agree, Mike. Totally agree.
He's very much Fredericks-like in the first season and a half Fredericks was Rivers. You know, bomb down that wing and, well, yeah, there goes the ball into the Hammersmith end.
But Fredericks had better crossing, Mike.
He got better, and, you know, and we saw that at the height of the Jokanović sort of team as well, didn't we? So, yeah, it is just creating good quality chances. That's the issue for me.
I totally agree, Mike, because, again, it's very interesting to watch them because I can see it. It's just it's really like they just cannot put it all together. It just doesn't seem to all work in unison. And I think, you know, again, if that's going to be how it's going to be, you know, it really will come down to scoring goals because – we can see that we are going to be tough to beat defensively. Now it really is another big part of the game, which is actually scoring the goals. And as you said, Mike, it's a very good point. creating the opportunities.
Yeah, well, there's a little bit of a rule of thumb. It doesn't quite work, but for every goal you score, you roughly get a point. If you look at a league table, it pretty much works out like that. And we've scored, yep, what, 21 goals, got 23 points.
Yeah.
And, you know,
we're not scoring enough.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a simple game. We're not scoring enough. We are stopping teams from scoring themselves. But again, there's two parts to the game, and we're not scoring enough goals. It's great. Point. All right, guys. Let's just talk about the starting 11. Let's get there right now. Max, your thoughts on the starting 11. Were you happy with the starting 11? It was this starting 11, I think. I don't think Anguissa started at Everton. I would have to rethink that a little bit. Maybe you have the answer to that, but it seems similar to the Everton game.
Yeah, I think it was Reed and Lamina against
That's
Everton,
what I think. Right.
Anguissa came in this match, and then different from the previous match he played against Sheffield United, I think it was Tete and Aina to start.
Okay.
Rather than, you know, Tete dropped out against Sheffield United. Other than that, I think, you know, Cavalera dropped to the bench in favor of Declan Reed. Didn't really have an issue with that. And I think that's what we saw there was probably one of our strongest.
At the time, what were you thinking? Because I actually liked the lineup.
Yeah, I liked it. I think Reed and Anguissa is a good combination. I think those are probably our two strongest central midfielders. And then, you know, Mitrovic back on the bench was big. Still don't know how Parker, or if you will, try to fit both Mitra and Madja in the same starting 11. But this seemed to me like a good starting 11. You know, back four again is what we've called for. Sticking with that was a positive sign.
Okay. Mike, what were your thoughts an hour before the match? Did you like the lineup, or were you thinking, you know, and again, I was actually a little bit surprised that Robinson was back in. Robinson was not in. I'm sorry, it was Aina. I thought Robinson would start. So what were your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I mean, first thing I look for is, you know, is Mitrovic or Kenny in the squad. Mitrovic was back, so I was happy with that. But really, we pretty much know nine of those starters. It's just whether is Tete going to be on the right? Is Aina going to be there? You know, Reed, is he going to start? I was glad Anguissa was back. Lamina, probably out of all the loans, is the one of the question marks. What's he actually bringing? I think I may have mentioned on last show, you know, I think we're going to play the big team soon.
Right. Again.
You know, I think there is an argument for Reed, Anguissa, and maybe Lamina starting the game. You know, that would pack the midfield type thing. But no, you looked at the lineup and you sort of went, yeah, okay, nice to see Bobby Reed sort of starting. But yeah, a question on the left back, but then Aina did well, you know, before. So it doesn't quite pick itself, but, you know, if you had three stabs at picking a lineup, I wouldn't be surprised if you picked that one.
Okay.
You know, he's pretty predictable on the way he goes at the moment.
Okay, very good. All right. All right, guys, we're going to spend very little time talking about the first half because really there's not much to talk about the first half. But over to you, Max. I just want to get your analysis of the first half because, again, it just looked like two teams that really didn't want to do too much to, you know, again, it just seemed very conservative on both sides, including Fulham. They were not taking many chances. As I believe Scott Parker even said, they were huffing and puffing, but they really were not creating much. So just give me your overall analysis of the first half. The one thing that I do want to mention, really the only opportunity that you can really talk about from Crystal Palace actually came from Anderson touching it back to Areola, and that was in the 27th minute. Now, you do have a couple of headers from Anderson in the first half, and that was actually not so bad. But beyond that, really, what is there really to talk about with the first half? What were you thinking watching it?
It was very cagey. I think that's the best way to describe it. And let's not, you know, pass off all the responsibility from Palace here, because I think they abdicated any responsibility they had to make this, you know, a two-sided football match. You know, when you're the home side, you're expected to attack, expected to take the match to their team. They did nothing. I think that is a very big part of why this match was so poor from a neutral standpoint.
Yep.
Also from our standpoint, you know, we possessed a lot of the ball, but as soon as they're very happy to sit off us until we got near their 18-yard box. And then they start to press and they start to, you know, make us uncomfortable. So much of the match was played just outside of the danger areas.
Yep.
And you mentioned we did have a number of set pieces.
We did.
We dominated the corner game, but that's been a consistent all year is that we struggled to score goals from corners. I still think that own goal, we had the two own goals, right? The Aina goal against Burnley and then the own goal Richie against Newcastle. Those ones I can think of that we scored off set pieces, and they're both very fortunate. Which is not a very good team at heading the ball without Mitrovic in there. And I think Anderson probably could have done a bit better in one of those headers, but you're right. No really main chances. And that's a bit disappointing because Palace were there for the taking.
Absolutely.
We knew they were going to attack. They're missing Zaha. You know, it's without him, they're not the same side. Everyone knows that. And it just feel like a wasted opportunity, very similar to how I felt at halftime against Sheffield United. You know, we just thrown away 45 minutes of football. And once you depend on a goal, a late goal in that second half, you're always going to be gambling. You're always going to be wondering what would happen if we had 10 more minutes. And again, you can also think of the West Ham United match recently when we had so much pressure in the final 10 minutes. What happens if that pressure starts earlier? What happens if, you know, we put that kind of pressure on the first half? And I think, you know, towards May, if we're still in this or if we're out of it, we'll look back and say, why didn't we attack this more?
Okay, very good. Mike, over to you. You know, as I mentioned, there were a couple of opportunities from set pieces from Anderson, but beyond that, really, it was just, and I watched an interview with Anderson, and he was talking about it that, you know, again, they weren't really creating enough. I'm paraphrasing from the interview, but they were, you know, and again, it just like looked like two teams, like Max said, cagey. And do you think, you know, I said this to Emilio, and I'm curious your view on this as well. Do you think this is partially by design? I hate to say it this way, that I know Parker wants them to be more brave, but does he also instill, let's get to halftime at least 0-0 or ahead by a goal. Maybe we nick a goal. It's almost like they're unwilling to take a lot of chances in the first half. I think I've seen consistency with this with Parker's teams. What is your view on that? Because obviously we have changes at halftime. We'll talk about it. Do you think part of this is on the players and part of this might be on Parker?
Well, I think it's a mentality thing, isn't it? I mean,
Right.
You know, if it's drilled into you from early on in the season, it's quite difficult for teams to suddenly change gear, you know, and, you know, go from I wouldn't say we were ever ultra defensive, but certainly, you know, trying to be more solid. And, you know, you've got the four defenders, you've got Reed, and Guisa gets a little bit forward, but I think it's very much weighted when you look at the way we attack. You know, if one side's attacking, the other side sort of tends to hold back.
Right.
So it's always about having four or six back. And I still think we don't get enough bodies in the box.
Totally agree, Mike.
So you watch other teams who play against us and you'll think, why have they got two or three people in the box when they're attacking? And we only ever seem to have one.
That's right, Mike.
Maybe two. We don't have the run. So we don't have Anguissa, Reed, or Loftus-Cheek, either of those three central midfielders, if you like, getting into the box when you've got Reed and Lookman down the other side. And I think it's also a case of, you know, we have the speculative sort of shots from outside the box. Lookman are cut in, or Reed or Cavalero when he came on as well. But what we're not, they're not gambling enough for me. They're not gambling enough at trying the 1-2s in the box or even running into the box, you know, to try and get fouled, for Christ's sake, or something. So not gambling in that sense. I think it is just a situation where we've got ourselves solid and that is just the way we play. But you've also got to remember Palace, as Max says, Palace was so negative, so solid. They were, you know, it was almost like they were playing, you know, eight of you can't get over the halfway line. It was like, I don't know the hockey rules too much, but I know it's all about you kind of certain players in zones. And it was almost like that. But that's Roy, you know, because Roy works like that. And we go back to the Great Escape, and that's how he built that team. But when you've got a team with a centre-back like Cahill, who is, let's be honest, over the hill, we should be causing them a lot more problems, and we should have been much more positive in a game that we should have won or needed to win. So the first half, it was really dull.
Okay. All right. Well, let's transition to the second half, but we have to talk about what happened at the beginning of the second half, the changes. Now, what's interesting here is, Max, I'll start with you. I want to talk about Robinson coming on, because the broadcast that we heard, the international broadcast, they made it sound like they believed that this was injury related. As we find out after the match, and I said this on Full Time, that was not the case. Parker said that this was tactical, that he wanted Robinson in there to be more offensive, basically. So what were your thoughts when he came on? Did you see what he was going to try to do? Because, again, I'm going to talk about with Mike in just a second the formation change, which I learned from the Anderson interview, because they changed the formation. But part of it was bringing Robinson. What was your thoughts when you saw this? Because, again, we heard that it was injury-related, and it turned not to be. This was tactical.
Yeah, I think I can see the justification behind it in terms of, you know, Robinson, a natural left-footer on the left-back position, where, you know, we've mainly seen playing the right. So it was a bit out of position for him. Although, you know, one of the best matches we've played all season, the Everton match, had Aina on that left back position. So don't know what to make of that, honestly. But I like it because you look at the wingers. Lookman, predominantly right-footed, he's always looking to cut in.
Yep.
And, you know, you have Loftus-Cheek on the right. He's always looking, essentially, he's playing quite centrally because he's more of a central player. As Mike was saying, it's not a lot of width in the team. Not a lot of crosses. And that puts a lot of pressure on those fullbacks. And if you want a fullback whipping crosses, you prefer the one who's, you know, on his dominant foot. That being said, Robinson, as we discussed, his delivery is lacking. It's still a bit poor. So that's kind of a counter argument to that. But I do think he offered that pace, and there were a number of runs he had that came surging forward to help out Lookman. So I think it made a bit of a difference.
Okay. All right. Good. And Mike, over to you, because, again, we're talking about the changes at halftime. When I watched the Anderson interview, which you can watch on fulhamfc.com, Anderson talks about the formation change, that they went to 4-3-3. And that was also intended to get more players in the box. You know, we're talking about getting players in the box. So what did you make about the changes? You know, we'll analyze the first half. Was this, again, I mentioned to you, this to me was Parker making, you know, again, I want him to make tactical changes, but he waited until halftime to do it. In the second half, he does this. What were your thoughts about changing the formation? Now we learned that it was more of a 4-3-3, and I want to say it probably helped Ruben Loftus-Cheek get more involved.
I did watch that interview, and I didn't see it, I have to say. And when you look at the stats for the second half, you can see the positional stats.
Yeah.
There is no change, really. Yes, Loftus-Cheek maybe slightly goes a bit more central, but
he seemed to go deeper too, Mike.
Yeah, first off, he was going all the way across. But actually, you know, Robinson coming on didn't make much of a difference sort of positional-wise. So
okay,
it may have intended to go to 4-3-3, but to me, it didn't work out. May have a little bit more when Cavalero came on.
Yes.
Robinson, I can understand why, because we weren't creating enough chances. We weren't penetrating them enough. And you want to put a natural left footer on there anyway. So that made sense. And, you know, and it's a decent sub. But I mean, it made a change. You know, we had much more impetus in the second half. And we definitely went for it more. So even if I couldn't see the tactical change he was trying to make, you certainly saw a little change in the mentality and a bit more urgency. And again, that maybe goes down to Palace as well, who, you know, an older team. You know, so they're going to tire a little bit more. And there was moments there where we were quite relentless. You know, we had the ball for long periods of the game. But yeah, I mean, it's so we went for it in that sense of the word. And you know, maybe a little bit earlier, talk about the other subs. But yeah, the Robinson one, yeah, made sense to me. What I found interesting was actually that he didn't take Tete off and he didn't put Aina over on the right. You know, because he's done that a couple of times.
He has.
So maybe Tete is now, you know, winning that sort of right back position.
Interesting. Very interesting stuff. Okay. All right. I'm going to mention some key moments and then Max, I'll go back over to you. So again, the match in the second half begins with, you know, a questionable, you know, I mentioned this, that again, you know, you can look at this a couple different ways. The shot by Majum, many people see as a waste, and in the end it is a waste, but I also thought, you know what, why not? You know, maybe it shows a little bit of intent that, hey, we're going to take the second half a little bit differently. And that, you know, from that point on, 51st minute, you have the header from Tosin off of a free kick, 54th minute, shot from Anderson, 55th minute, free kick, Anderson's free kick just goes wide. And then in the 66th minute, you have the shot by Mondra that just goes wide. Cavallero comes on for Bobby Decadova-Reed at that point. And Mike, very good by you. I could see a change there when Cav comes on. But let's talk about this. Max, over to you. Because Josh Mondra, you know, scores two goals. And this was a very good opportunity I'm talking about in the 68th minute, the header. And actually set up from Cavallero. So Cavallero's substitution paid off from the get-go. So thoughts on this opportunity? Should he have scored here?
Yeah, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. I think, you know, we give Cavallero a lot of stick for his poor finishing when he was playing striker.
That's a great cross.
I think we deserve to give him credit for the cross, but also criticize Mondra because he got in front of the defender. He's, what, 6-7 yards out from goal. And anywhere to left or right of the keeper, that's in. Guaita makes a good save, to be fair, because it's not directly at him, but it needs to be in the corners. It needs to be a different height rather than a comfortable height for the keeper to save. And yeah, when you get a striker in the January window and you put a lot of pressure on them, they have to make the most out of every single opportunity. So that's a tough one to take because it's a poor finish. And again, it's a larger issue when we're on top in matches, as that chance came in the middle of that kind of 15 to 20 minute spell of really good pressure.
Yep.
We couldn't capitalize. So again, you know, I really like Mondra. Of course, I love what he did in his first start at Goodison. But again, the recruitment, you have to point fingers at that. Again, in the attacking department, if you want to stay in the league, you need better quality up top. And I think Mondra started that well, and I really want him to do well, but it's a bit unfair to expect him to keep us up single-handedly, you know, because he's not that kind of player.
Oh, I agree with that, yeah.
And I think it's not his fault. I'm definitely annoyed at him. He missed a chance, but you have to look up higher up the club and say, where have the striker reinforcers come? Why have they come so late? And honestly, Mondra is not going to be that guy, in my opinion. I want him to be, but, you know, he played, what, one and a half seasons in Liga, played really well in League One in England. I don't think he ever made a Premier League appearance before he came to us in January. That's not the guy who's going to get you 10 goals in the second half of the season and go on a great run of scoring form. And again, I think a better striker scores that chance. As simple as that.
Okay. Mike, your thoughts on the opportunity for Mondra?
Yeah, I mean, it's you've got to take your chances. That's the difference in this league, isn't it? That's the difference in quality, you know. We said earlier in the show that it's about giving him a chance. He gets that chance. He doesn't take it. Okay, yep. It's harsh on him, you know, if you're going to be critical. But, you know, he's that kind of player. He's the, you know, fox in the box, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But he's not going to give you much more outside it, is he, really? We've seen that.
No, it's inside.
You know, yep. You know, if he's not scoring, then he's not doing an awful lot else, really, than what I'm seeing. And, you know, there was lots of people getting carried away when he scored those two goals and that kind of thing. And, you know, he's clearly a decent striker. You can see that from his runs.
Yep.
You know, where he's trying to make space. And the players have got to find him when he does that. But it's just like you had Ivor on the show the other day, you know, he gave him the ball, he put the ball in the net. You know, maybe a different level. But,
right.
You know, outside, I think even Gordon would agree that, you know, he wasn't that involved. And when I think it was at Chelsea, he ended up playing on the wing, you know. So, and he's a striker. We have to give him chances. When those chances come along, he's got to take him and he can make a name for himself. He didn't the other day. But as Max says, there's only him and Mitrovic really who have a pedigree of scoring any kind of goals. So they have to, you know, one or both has to be in that starting lineup, and we have to give him chances. So we can only hope next game, if one falls to him, he can take it.
Okay, excellent stuff. Okay, moving on. Right after that, you have the opportunity from Anderson, the Cahill block. Just unfortunate, it was right there, and you're thinking, Fulham are going to score there, but give credit to Cahill there. And then in the 70th minute, again, there's still a lot of pressure from Fulham. You have the opportunity from Ruben Loftus-Cheek. From distance, just goes wide again. He's a player that needs a goal. But this is where I want to stop, guys, because, again, we talked about Cavallero coming on. I thought that was an impact. But we talked about this earlier on, so I want to ask you guys both. Mike, I'll start with you. Mitro coming on for the final 20 minutes, but Anguissa coming off, how'd that end up going? Because, again, I've heard a lot of criticism after the match about this, that it just didn't work. Your thoughts?
Well, it didn't work in the fact that Palace had their best spell in the last 10 minutes. So I don't, you know, last 5 or 10 minutes. So we certainly lost some impetus, for sure. It was positive from Parker, absolutely positive. To, you know, for once, he was the
intent. The intent, Mike.
And to put them both on, to put Mitrovic on and play the two strikers, I'm glad to see that. But maybe he should have tweaked it around a little bit more to give us a bit more of a chance. You know, I did expect him to go to three at the back, actually, and put the two up top. Oh. You know, there you are. I was a bit surprised. Which I, you know, maybe would have been a better move to make. I don't know. But, yeah, Anguissa, I was surprised that. I wonder if there's something going on there because, obviously, he's been out the team for a couple of games. Now yep. He's only played just over an hour again. You know, is he carrying? I'm just wondering. You're not going to take Reed off, are you? Because I've got a little dynamo. So yeah, it was a good sub in the fact that it was positive, but it didn't have a positive effect on the game.
Right.
And maybe, 10, 15 minutes into with 5 minutes left, we'd just run out of steam and that's why we allowed Palace a couple of sort of half chances or for them to get back into it, and again, we didn't really give Mitrovic enough or anything really.
No.
So yeah, I'm not sure what I would have done. I may have taken off Tete and gone with three at the back, possibly. I'm not sure.
Okay, Max, your view on this, because Mike brings this up. The intent on the face of it is positive. This is a positive move, but I think it also exposed maybe Reed a little bit, because again, it was just really about him at that point. But how can you fault the intent? And I think that's where Mike's going. It didn't work, but the intent was to go for it.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think I don't want to be too hypocritical here because I was very critical of Parker in the West Ham match for waiting to sub on Mitro and Raja. And this, on the face of it, was a great move in terms of we're chasing the match, get more strikers in the pitch. But I think there's a more intelligent way to do it than taking off a midfielder because, as people have remarked in the comments, and as I said earlier, yep. You lose the midfield in a way. And I think that's might have explained Palace getting back in the match more.
Yep.
But in addition, what did we create for Mitrovic? Did we play to his strengths? One cross I can remember was one of the last kicks of the match, which was a Tete one, really overhit.
Yep.
I can't really think of any other crosses in the 6-yard box that he could have got his head on, could have got a foot on, or could have capitalized from. So if you're going to put on Mitrovic, you have to give him that service, and it wasn't there. So that's what really frustrated me. I might have even maybe taken off Maja.
Okay.
Just because he, didn't take his chance and didn't offer that much. Not as like a slight to him, but you still keep the same formation, but you have more of a target man who's perhaps better at heading. But again, it was frustrating because it came just as we were in the middle of that period of pressure and we thought, great, this will lead to more pressure.
Right.
But as Mike remarked, it actually coincided in Palace's best spell of the match, which was quite tedious. And you just felt the nil-nil was coming. And it's an awful feeling to have that again.
Yeah, it's funny because, and again, to have a clean sheet's a good thing, but another nil-nil draw. And listen, Fulham did create a couple more opportunities, but I thought Crystal Palace were more dangerous after this substitution. And you have the 88th minute, you have Lookman's shot that goes wide, and then you have the header from Tosin in the 90th minute, and then you have the shot from Maja in the 92nd minute. But again, it turns out to be a nil-nil draw. I think we all can agree that it's 2 points drop. It's unfortunate because I thought it was there for them. So in a way, even though we're going back and talking about the substitution of Anguissa and bringing on Mitro, it didn't work. The intent was there to work. So I want to give Parker credit. He was going for it. They were going for it. But I just thought the approach was one thing in the first half, and then it was more aggressive in the second half. I would like to see a more aggressive approach throughout the match, but it is what it is, guys. But listen, let's finish up talking about this match with man of the match. Mike, who's your man of the match?
I'm probably going to go for Anson probably, you know, he was the most consistent, was involved. Free kick was an interesting one. Yep. You know, yeah, could have worked.
Yeah, so he's been practicing.
Alfie Boston-esque.
Probably Anderson then, but yep. I just wanted to mention about Cavalero, actually.
Yep. Let's go back. Let's talk about Cav.
Yeah, sorry. I just wanted to say, you know, he's looked more dangerous coming on as a sub, and I think Max Meyer mentioned it earlier.
Yeah, he did.
That's for me, that's his role, I think, now. I wouldn't be too keen to see him start. Bring him on, let him do what he's got to do for 20 minutes or whatever, and maybe that's going to help us more than him starting.
Just so you know, in a future episode of Cottage Talk, I've already thought about this. We're going to go through all the players, and I'm going to ask the question, are they a starter in the Premier League, a bench player in the Premier League, or simply a championship player? So I thought that'd be – and Cavalero's an interesting one to talk about. So definitely just future episode of thinking about doing that, really just talk about all the players. But all right, guys, good stuff. Max, over to you, man of the match. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I felt bad for Mike because – he sprung a question on him, and I was thinking, I don't have an answer for the man of the match, which tells you all you need to know about the Palace game, is that there's no individual person that stood out. I would agree with Anderson. I think he was probably the one you'd have to pick. You'd say him. I think Stefan said it in the comments earlier, in the sense that we're asking Anderson to do it all. Yep. He's captaining the side. He's defending. We're asking him to score from corners and then score from free kicks. So it's a Joachim Anderson FC right now. But I thought he was bright. And honestly, you can make fun of the free kick. It wasn't that far wide. And if it's on target, that's a goal, because Guaita takes a step to the wrong way. So maybe that's a bit of a good play in the future. But yeah, you're right. It was no individual really stood out. And, it's nil-nil, so what do you expect?
Okay, guys. Very good. All right. Coming up next, the second part of the show is going to be an interesting game that we're going to play. Okay, guys, as I mentioned to you guys off air, I had a little bit of surprise, and Mike probably figured out what the surprise is, because, again, Mike loves numbers. So before we do that, before we start the game, Mike, let's talk about your tweets, because you actually, I thought your tweets were more positive after the match, because you were talking about the upcoming matches, and that's going to lead to our game. So let's talk about your tweets after the match.
I'd have to go back and read them, but no, I think what you're alluding to was that
the next three matches and the nine after that.
Yeah, so basically what you got to look at is everyone's talking about what's the target, what are we going to need to get?
Exactly.
And certainly up until about January, it was all looking around about 34, 35, 36, somewhere around there. But now you basically have two or three teams, the two teams above and then Burnley as well, but the two above on a point per game. So it's very easy. 12 games out, we're going to need 38. Okay. Now, there's a chance one of them will drop to 36, one of them might get to 40, but the way tables work is it will probably end on 38.
Okay.
So you've got to look at a point a game. So the trouble is we've got 12 games, we've got 21 from, no, we've got, what we got, 23 from...
We've got 23 right now.
Yeah, 23 from 26, yeah. So I said that what we need to do is get to parity, which is a point per game, as soon as we can. Now, the fact is we're playing three of the big six coming up in a row. There's a good chance that we could lose all three. We might get a win, we might get a couple of draws. But for argument's sake,
yep,
just say we lose all three. Okay. So at 29 games, we will be stuck on 23 points. Okay. But pretty much the table above us, they will be on 29 points. So we're still only 6 or 7 behind with 9 games left. And we would have played 3 of the top 6, or 3 of the big 3.
Right.
So that's all I was sort of saying is you've got to look at it as in the hole.
Right. Okay?
And not panic, because we need arguably 15 points from 12 games.
Right.
And we will probably still need 15 points from 9 games, possibly. but you have to weigh that up against who you're actually playing. So that's all I was sort of saying is, in three games time, they're suddenly not going to be 9-12 points clear because
you're trying to
points, teams come down. Yep. It's the way leagues work. And it's why when I do a lot of stuff, I never actually talk about the teams. I just say 18th is this.
You just look at the points, right.
Same way the other way when you're going to the top. It's like it's sixth place. That's what you want to go for. Don't worry about the teams because the league will sort itself out. And I've got enough data to say that's the way it works.
Okay, so, excellent. Excellent stuff.
I've looked at a lot of stuff today. And 1 minute I'm up here thinking it's fairly good. And then I look at something else and I go,
I know.
You know, I mean, the one I'm stuck on now is we actually need, okay, so to both of you, have we been playing well over the last 12 games? Would you say we've done all right?
I'd say we've done all right. We've just done all right.
Good stuff. 12 games, right, so over that 12 games, we've done all right. The next 12 games, we've actually got to get more points than we did in the last 12 games. So you sort of go,
No, because
then you look at Newcastle.
Yep.
And they've got to play five of the bottom six. So everyone around them, you know, so they technically they've got easier games to sort of get points from. Six of our 12 games are against the big six.
Okay, Mike. Okay, now you're depressing me. Okay. No, listen.
Well, are you including Arsenal in the big six? Because I don't think they're big six anymore. I mean,
okay. Well, that makes things interesting because that's going to lead to our little game. And if you're watching live, feel free to play along with our little game. Here's the little game, okay? Let me put up this graphic, and you guys will probably get a little chuckle on this, so let me just put it up here. Okay, it's Cottage Hawk's points prediction game. Guys, we're going to predict every one of the matches, okay? And I want you to come up with a points total at the end. So while we go through this, we're going to go through each and every one, keep adding on. We start at 23. We're going to go to each and every match. I'm going to play along with us. I actually did this by myself. Mike, I came up with 42, believe it or not.
Ross, what are you smoking?
But I don't think I'll come up with 42
points. You just said what? We're on what? 23? 21. How many points are you want to double the points? Oh my god!
Okay. But like I said, I'm going to do this fresh now, so I probably won't come up with that total. The magic number Mike is saying is 38. Let's see if we come up with 38. Okay, so let's start here. All right, Mike, over to you. Prediction for the Tottenham match.
Draw.
Max.
Yeah, I've actually done this in on my own time, independently. I had no idea because I was obsessed. So I actually have us losing the next three. So you can just put me in for zero for the next three. No, I mean that, but believe me, I still have us staying up, but we'll see that.
Okay. I'm penciling this as an upset victory. I got a victory here. Okay. The Liverpool match. Max, you have it as a loss. Mike, what do you have for the Liverpool?
Yeah, loss. Yeah.
Okay, I got a draw. As you can see, I'm already positive. Okay, Man City, I think we're all going to agree. Loss?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, hey, West Brom did get a point that he had, but I see what the goal is.
All right, here's a big one, guys. Mike, to you first. Leeds United.
I just can't see us winning, but I'll take a draw.
Okay, a draw. Max?
Yeah, agreed.
Draw? I got a victory. I guess you guys can see where this is going. Okay. Aston Villa away. Mike, over to you.
Yeah, actually, I think we'll win that one. Yeah.
Okay. I have a draw. Max?
Yeah, I'm with Russ. I think we'll draw it.
Okay. All right. Wolves match at home. Guys, over to you, Mike.
Draw.
Max?
I think we'll win that.
I have a win. Okay. All right, let's go further on. Ooh, the Arsenal match. Max, I'll go to you first.
I think we'll get a point. I think we'll get a point against Arsenal.
Okay, I put a point down. Mike?
I lost.
Okay. Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. Mike?
Loss.
Max?
Yeah, I think we'll lose.
Okay, I'm going to put a draw. Okay. Let's go to Burnley. This is, you know, I'm putting this as a must win. I'm already saying 3 points against Burnley. Mike?
Yeah, I'm going to go with three.
Okay. Max?
Yeah, I think we'll win.
Okay. Southampton away. Mike?
Now, the question is it Southampton from the last six games, or will it be Southampton in nine games when they probably, you know?
I don't know. That's a great question.
I'll go for a draw.
Draw. Okay. Max?
I think we'll win this.
Okay, I'm going for a draw. Okay. That's going to lead up to Manchester United, which I have as a loss. Over to you, Max.
I think we'll lose that as well.
Okay. Mike, yeah, anything same. From Manchester United?
Yeah, full abs.
Okay. All right. We end with Newcastle. Over to you. I'll give you first shot at this, Max.
Yeah, I think we'll win that. So in my situation, we win three out of our last four. So okay. I think we really turn on towards the end against teams around us.
Okay.
That's 15 points.
Okay. Mike, over to you.
Yeah, I think we'll win.
Okay. All right.
Well, I think we'll win as it is. Now, if it comes down to it as being the playoff game.
Okay. All right. All right, guys, let's all do our totals. Max, what was your total? You said you already came up with your total.
Yeah, 15. So I think that gets us exactly to 38. Oh, no. Yep, the 38.
Okay. Mike?
Yeah, I got 13, so I guess it's 36. And then you do get them to 43, Russ.
I know.
So, Russ, what are your losses in this?
My losses are Manchester United and Manchester City. So I think we can actually get points off of Chelsea and Arsenal. Those would be the games that I was kind of going back and forth on, but I'm not that impressed with Chelsea, and I'm certainly, you know, and I think we can get a point off. You know, again, these are neutral matches now. That's why I've kind of changed my thinking on this. They're neutrals. So I'm thinking, why not? But, you know, you guys know me.
I guess a better question is, like, how many do you have us winning? Because I think we can draw. We've shown we don't lose very many matches, but we can't win. So how many? I have us winning four.
I have us winning five. Mike, how many do you have us winning?
Three.
Okay.
It's interesting because me and Max both have us losing five and you have us losing two.
Yeah.
So, you know, realistically, I think me and Max are probably...
Oh, you guys are more realistic than I am.
We're just maybe a loss too many, but then maybe a win too many as well. So I think it just comes down to it. You know, it is too close to call, as they say.
Right.
And it's going to be on a knife edge. And, you know, there's some really interesting six-point games between the bottom guys, you know, Newcastle and Brighton. You know, they must be so demoralised from their games recently. I mean, talk about us not being able to score. And we've all been focusing on Newcastle, the ones. Yeah, now they've got a couple of really serious injuries, which may cause them real problems. But you do wonder now with Brighton, maybe they're the team we might, you know, end up. There is a possibility that three of us all end up on 36, 37 points, and because of goal difference, we'll probably get away with it.
That's right.
But you know, we're a hard team to beat. But we can't score goals, so we're struggling to win games. So a point a game over the next 12, we just need to get another couple of wins somewhere and just to get to that 15.
That's why I kind of threw the Tottenham match. I'm thinking like the Everton match. Now, again, I could be dead wrong on that, but, you know, and again, you guys know I'm positive. I didn't even do my total beforehand. I just did this fresh, and it's actually before I did it, I had 42, and I do it again, I have 43, which is pretty pie in the sky. I can't see that happening, but you know what? We'll see what happens, guys.
I look at it a different way, Russ. So I mentioned we're playing six of the six big teams. Whether they're in the mid table or not, doesn't matter. But they're the six big teams. So out of those six games, if we can get a win or three draws, then you need 12 points from the other six games. Okay.
Yep.
So, and you look at those and that makes it tough. So once you break that down, you then sort of think, well, maybe a win and a draw from those six games. So it is really knife edge stuff.
It's,
we haven't got much room to make too many mistakes. So going back to my tweets that you mentioned, we can lose the next three. But it does make it incredibly hard if we can't pick a point up or two. So.
Right. Well, Mike, you brought up a good point, because out of, say, Newcastle, Brighton, and us, Newcastle United, you know, and again, I can't stand, I watched that last match, but, you know, there's a common theme of not scoring goals, but Newcastle United will get Callum Wilson back, and that will make a difference. Maybe you're right about Brighton, Mike, because they can't score. I think they're worse than us. You know, I mean, they really struggle. They, you know, it's funny. That's a team that looks like they could be a top 10 team. They just can't score goals. As Giannis said to me, it's like, what's wrong with Brighton? They just can't score goals. What I think gives us a chance, Mike, like you said, we need the goals to win the matches, but we'll always be in these matches because of the defense. So we should be in it to the end. Yeah. Would you agree with that? That we should be in this relegation battle until the end because of the defense. Yeah, to get us over the top, it's going to come down to the wins.
Yeah. I mean, we don't look in danger of losing games an awful lot, but then we're not convincing in going to win them. So that's why I go back to the point that, you know, over the next 12 games, yeah, we could probably get 13, 14 points maybe, because that's historically the way we are and we're stuck in that gear. And, you know, I don't agree with people who say, oh, this team is a top 10 team. You know, it's not, because it can't score goals.
That's right.
So it's not. And, you know, it's... I do think it's just going to come down to that last couple of games. If we can get to the Newcastle game, still with a chance of it being in our hands that we have to win a game.
That's right.
Or even get a draw, you know, we might be ahead of them, who knows. Then that would be, you know, a brilliant achievement. But I can't see it being a situation where it's done and dusted and we're safe. I just can't see how that mathematically works out for us.
Okay. So you go against the positivity of Rob and Gordon, because if you saw the show, like, they were, I mean, they had me all excited because they were very positive. So, you know.
And as we said off air before we started, I try and be realistic, you know.
I know.
You know, I hope we are.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like a nice relaxing game at the cottage if I was able to get a ticket. I just don't see it, you know.
Mike, one final topic going on, because again, let's say it comes down to the Newcastle match. And let's talk about, again, if supporters are going to be allowed back in. Do you think that's going to be a reality? Because I'm sure there's going to be a lot of pushback. What's the latest you're hearing about that?
Well, so, I mean, it does look like it'll be a reality, but the situation is, and some people might say, oh, well, that's tough, you know, is I don't think it's fair because of the way the cutoff date is with regards when fans could be allowed in.
Yep.
There is a chance that the week before, on game 37 or 36, whenever it is, those teams won't have a fan. So, you know, I do think it's unfair for us. In a game which potentially, you know, is a decider for us to have home fans, and Newcastle would not have had that chance in their previous home game. So there is talk of moving the games to get over this sort of date.
Yep.
I just think it's unfair. And I know I'll get, you know, I know some people have, I've mentioned it to people, and they go, oh, we're tough, you know, and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, in the end, you've got to look at it in the whole. That's the way I look at it. It's just a bit unfair, I think. You know, we'll take a ticket, we'll take it. And I think as...
I was going to say, Mike, are you going to say no? Obviously not.
No, you're
going to be there.
Rules. You play under the rules. But,
yeah, exactly.
Honestly, it is unfair, Mike. I agree with you. I wouldn't let any fans in. I would just finish the season without fans.
Yeah.
Because it's still May. Yes, the vaccine is being rolled out here very quickly. But at the end of May, we're still going to be in a situation where it's still going to be restricted and you're still going to have lots of measures in place. Just why do it for that last game? Just wait until August when we're going to be in a much better position. And it's fair on everyone. And safety-wise, it's fair on everyone.
Okay.
But that's just my view.
So. Okay. Max, what do you make of this?
Yeah, I think the proposal maybe to push, you know, the second to last match week to a date where it makes sense.
Yeah,
might be fair. At the end of the day, I'm pessimistic that any fans will be let in at all. Kind of agreeing with Mike, this virus has been so fast changing. And I remember, you know, I've heard all about the UK stuff when Boris said, oh, you can visit your family on Christmas. And, you know, we have variants. The virus changes. No one really knows what it'll look like in 3 months' time, whatever. And hopefully the vaccine route goes well. I mean, fingers crossed it works. But I've seen enough of this disease that I know there's no easy way to predict 3 months out what will happen. So okay. I predict we might not even have to deal with this question because we might not be at that point.
Okay.
But just a point on the last conversation about how many points you need, et cetera.
Yep.
You know, you look at Newcastle United, and I know Mike doesn't like to look at the other teams, and I respect that from a statistical point of view. But as a fan, I have to look at it. So their next three, they play West Brom, Villa, Brighton. You know, so I think that's a decent opportunity to win against West Brom and perhaps win against Brighton.
Of course.
But they enter.
Who are they going to play though?
Really tough.
That brings Brighton down.
Yeah, that's fair. But they have a really tough running. Spurs. I think Burnley's probably the weak link there, but Spurs, Burnley, West Ham, Liverpool, Arsenal, Leicester, City. So yeah. That next seven matches, that's tough for them. And then the final two is us and Sheffield United.
Sheffield United, yeah.
And I actually went and calculated the Newcastle points, and this probably was a bit pessimistic, but I have them getting 11 points over the run where I have us getting 15. So that has us staying up, et cetera. But it just goes to show that no, Newcastle don't have an easy run either.
No.
And about, I do want to temper that analysis by saying, if you watch the Wolves match, they weren't nearly as bad as everyone, you know, made them out to be.
Newcastle actually played well.
Yeah. And I think we have to remember that.
Credit.
We focus on them as a bogey team and maybe Brighton too, but I think they're still streetwise Premier League clubs with a lot of quality in them. And I know Newcastle hit hard by injuries, and that's why I have some hope. But
that's a big deal though, man.
We can't just expect them to roll over
no. In
the run in. And I think their wins against Everton, they want to go to St. Park as well.
Yep.
And they beat Southampton. It shows that they kind of have that winning mentality in a way that it would be unlikely for them just to lose so many in a row. But I'm hoping they fall apart. I think they're going to be faced with injuries. That's big. I think Sam Maximin might be out. You know, we obviously know Callum Wilson's out. But as Mike mentioned, you know, Brighton can get sucked into it. And when the teams around us play each other, on one hand, yes, it's good for, you know, a team like Newcastle, but it means that they can't all win. They
that's
both
right.
win matches. So
that's
it's one way to look at it. I think Mike had the best point in the sense.
And that goes to Mike's point that it's not going to be like 9 points, Mike. It's going to be like six, even if we lose all three.
Yeah. I mean, it's don't underestimate. We all underestimate Bruce and we can all laugh at him, but he's an experienced manager. As I mentioned, five of their games are against the teams at the bottom. Yes, they got those other hard runs, just as we have as well.
Yep.
But he knows how to play against us, and he knows how to play against those other teams at the bottom. And as a Newcastle, if you're a Newcastle fan, you're looking at those five games in your game. I mean, what do we need from that? You know, you're not ideally 10, but probably if you can get 7 from those five games, you know, that's and then pick up a 3 points in one of those other odd ones, you know, you're almost there. But I think you're really, you know, 11 from their last 12 or 10 from their last is a realistic figure for Newcastle. So again,
it's right on the edge.
36 points. Yeah, exactly.
Right on the edge.
It's that win here, it's that last minute winner they get against Brighton or whatever, that's going to flip it. You know,
it's going to come down to the end, but that's what made this exercise interesting, even though I was kind of the outlier with my total there. But you know, it was interesting to see both of your totals because you guys are more realistic than I am. I'm way too much positivity. I'll be the first to admit it, but that's just how I roll. Anyways, great show. Before we go, Mike, final thoughts on the show before we wrap this up?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Considering it was probably the most boring game to watch all season,
but that's why I came up with this game.
Yeah, no, it was a good show. Really enjoyed it, and it's there are positives to take. You know, we are playing well, and or certainly in certain ways we're playing well, and our points should be a bit higher than it has been. But we've just got to find a way to score a goal. Somebody's going to get beat. I don't think somebody's going to get beat well. I don't think it's going to be in the next three games. games. But yeah. Before the end of the season, we're going to see us get 3 or 4, I'm sure.
Okay. Max, final thoughts before we go.
I like that optimism from Mike there. We're gonna get
I know, it's actually making me feel much better.
But it's funny because that just seems so outlandish. And I know we got 3 against Leeds and a loss, but I think that's the highest we got all season. So it's amazing to think we get 3-1 match. But one final thought I want to say is that all of us have us beating Newcastle in the final of the season. I think, Russ, in your scenario, we'd already be well clear, so it might matter less.
Oh, yeah.
But in Mike and I's prediction, what worries me, and this might be getting a bit too ahead of myself, but I'll go there, is if Newcastle are ahead of us, right? It could be 1 point, could be 3 points, whatever. All they'll need to do is just play for the draw, and we'll need to win. And what worries me is they'll just set up shop, and knowing our weaknesses of breaking teams down, it could be just such a nerve-wracking, frustrating match. But, you know, we're not there yet. That's many, many months.
I would like to be in that situation regardless. I understand what you're saying. Based on what we've watched, can Fulham break down a team like that? Well, have to see. But I'd like them to be in the situation or better to do that. And my final thought involves this, guys. We really haven't talked about this, but goal differential could play a factor here. Goal differential. And Newcastle United, you know, and again, there's some decent space there. So, again, just don't sleep on goal differential. And like, as Mike said, listen, if we beat someone fairly well, that's going to increase the goal differential. So that's something to consider if it comes down to that final match. But in my scenario, it's not going to come down to that final match, guys. Anyways. All right. Great show. But it is time to wrap up this episode. I do want to mention this. Mr. Cohen, we're going to be doing Cohen Squared Show. Yes, we're going to be doing a special show with – it's going to be Wonder Twins. It's going to be Max and his twin sister going to be doing a show with me. That should be a lot of fun. I look forward to that, Max. Are you looking forward to that?
Yeah, it'll be good. You know, my twin sister, Rachel. Russ just found out. I thought I told him earlier, but he just found out last week that I have a twin sister who's a massive Fulham supporter as well. She always listens or says she listens to the podcast, but she watches every match. And hopefully we'll get a good show in soon.
Yeah, that should be fun. That should be a fun show to do. And I'll just basically step away and just let the Coens go at it. So that should be fun. But anyways, let's wrap up the show. For Max Cohen and Mike Gregg, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for watching and listening to Cottage Talk. It's the 90th minute, and all to play for at the end of the match. All your mates are around. You've got your McDonald's share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? I know I'm in. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.